Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start again. We had some technical difficulties. The time is 4:03. My name is Raymond Thomas, the host of the Prompt Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. As I started to say, I have three segments today. The last segment, I wanted to preview that first, will be of some of the highlights of that Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Boehner, gave at the Economic Club of New York. And the reason why it's important, he did make some news as regards the Republican position in terms of the national debt ceiling. There's actually a statutory limit on the amount of debt that the United States incurs. It's currently approximately $14,300 billion in round numbers. And there, it looks like we'll hit that sometime next week. And without an increase of authority or raising that limit, there's a potential that the United States could default on its debt. I don't think that's going to happen. Plus, there are other ways that the Department of Treasury can extend that through August. At least that's what they're saying. And as a practical matter, and I've said this before, the interest on the debt on any month, there's more than enough tax revenues to cover it. So if you pay the interest, you're not going to be defaulting. The problem you get into, because the United States government is, for example, is running deficits over $1,000 billion for the last 3 years and going on 4 years, is that your outlays are exceeding your revenue by over $1,000 billion. So what that means is that if they really, the Treasury as well as the Obama administration, if they truly want to avoid a default on the debt, in other words, pay the interest and pay any U.S. Treasury securities that are maturing, is to pay them first, which means that someone in the government is not going to get paid if that debt limit is not increased. And that's why the Secretary, Tim Geithner, Secretary of the Treasury, has since January been kind of beating the drums that we need to increase this, or otherwise, the heavens are going to fall. Well, it's not as simple as that. And what the Republicans have said all along is we're not going to give you what's called a clean bill, where it's a vote on just that issue to increase it. The Obama administration would like to increase it over 2,000. The number I understand that they're requesting is over 2,700. Billion increase that would take them, through their administration. And the reason why they need that much is this year, fiscal year 2011, it's estimated that just this one fiscal year, they're going to have a deficit of over $1,600 billion. So you can see why there's a certain amount of panic or concern or at least an attempt by the political class to, panic the people that the United States government is going to potentially default on its debt. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think that's just a lot of people blowing smoke. And House Speaker Boehner gave an interesting speech, actually a refreshing speech. I was surprised that he really said many of the things he said. And I'll get into that in the last segment that will be closing out today's show. And for those that are not Richland College, either staff or students, this is the last week of the semester, and this week students will be graduating with an associate degree, most of them, and going on either to the extent that they can find a job, gonna either join the workforce or continue on with their education at a senior college, and we have several in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, including SMU, University of Texas at Arlington, North Texas University, University of Texas at Dallas, University of Dallas, or just some of the Texas Christian, don't forget them, are just some of the colleges that are in the area. And many people go to those colleges, or if they're fortunate, can go out of state. So I want to first congratulate those students that have completed their associate degree and wish them the best of luck. And whether it's that means their pursuit of their higher education or employment in the employment period, whether it's government or private sector. The first segment today, every month, because we have high rates of employment, I give you kind of a heads up on what happened in terms of the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, every month puts out a report on what the current unemployment rate is, as well as how many jobs were created. So I will be covering that and what that means, whether it's good or bad. And in the second segment, I'd like to briefly introduce you to what's coming back or becoming more and more in the news is what's called the Misery Index. And that was there are several misery indexes, but the one that's most commonly used is it's the sum of the unemployment rate plus the inflation rate. And if you were listening to last week's show, I went over the rise in gasoline prices and what was behind it. So we are seeing, both in the energy sector as well as in food, substantial increases in prices. And I think what you're going to see over the next 2 years is inflation is coming back. And when that happens, then the Federal Reserve is going to have to, at some point, engage in a contractionary monetary policy. And that's just the opposite of what we have right now. I fully expect that inflation will be over what they call core inflation, will be over 2% next year. And it might even be sooner than that. And at that point, the Fed is going to have to change its monetary policy from one of easy monetary policy to one of that's contractionary. And what that means, it's going to have to raise, for example, the federal funds rate. That's the rate that banks can borrow from each another, as well as decreases in the money supply. Now, we're not there yet, and the Fed, gave any indication as to when that will happen. I think will happen the early part of next year. If I'm right, and I'm just one person, but you're seeing inflation today every day at the pump, as well as when you go grocery shopping, and people are getting squeezed, especially if you happen to be unemployed as well, you're living on a fixed income. Gas is double what it was 2 years ago when President Obama took office. And that's really hurting people, especially, again, if you're, looking for a job and you got to fill your tank up to get there, that can put a world of hurts into you. So let's then the third segment, like I said, will be some brief comments upon John Boehner's speech that he gave to the Economics Club of New York. Last Friday morning, the Bureau of Labor Statistics announced that the unemployment rate had increased from 8.8% in March to 9.0% in April. And that's the what's called technically called the U3 measure of inflation. That's the one that's called also the headline number. That's the one you hear on the radio either radio or television news or on talk radio. That represents over 13. I think it's the exact number, about 13.7 million people are currently unemployed that are seeking a full-time job. And that went up. Now, initially, and probably most people would say, well, that's bad, that's negative. However, I sort of have a different take on it. Let me back up just for a second. If you've listened to past shows, I've gone over this, but I'll go over it one more time because it really bears repeating. What the Bureau of Labor Statistics does every month is a survey. They come up and they're doing a survey, a subset, if you will, or a sample of the population to determine they ask a series of questions of a household to determine one is the person either employed, unemployed, or out of the labor force, and that's the major, let's say, thrust of that survey is to make that determination, and based on the answer to those questions, if they call you up, they're not going to ask you point blank or you're employed or unemployed. They got a series of questions that that you respond to, and then someone else, as well as a computer, looks at it and based on your response, puts you in one of three categories. You're either employed, you have a job that could be either full-time or part-time job, or you're unemployed, you're willing to work and you're actively seeking work, or you're no longer part of the labor force. And that could be simply you're, for example, a housewife, a young housewife taking care of their children, one or more young children that have elected to stay home while their husband or spouse works. So you're not participating in the labor force. Or you could be what's called a discouraged worker. That's discouraged individual. And the fact that although you're unemployed and would like a job, in the last 30 days you had not made any effort to search out for a job. So those surveys are very important. It's about 60,000 households. You're in it for for a little over a year, and then you're outside of that sample. And what happens is every quarter you get a turnover as to who they're calling. So initially it's the same person for a little over a year, that changes, and that's important. Now, what's happening is from last November, our unemployment rate was 9.8%, which is quite high. It suddenly dropped from 9.8 to 8.8% in March. There were two or three major drops of like 0.4 drop in a single month, which is fairly large. But what's really happening is it's not like people were suddenly finding jobs. What was happening is many of the people that were unemployed or in the previous months were characterized as unemployed were now in the category of discouraged. They had not bothered, or let me put it in context, after about a year or two of sending out resumes and interviewing, and you're up against, in many cases, dozens if not hundreds of people for one single position, It's only human nature that you're eventually going to get discouraged and might not even seek work for a month or more. And that's what's happening. You've had more and more people are discouraged. I won't say dropping out. They want a job, but they just have not been successful in getting one. And that's what was happening. A large percentage of that drop was just that. And you see that in a decline in the civilian labor force, as well as a decline in the what's called the civilian labor participation rate, which is usually in normal times between 66 and 67%. Today it's at a low, it's been at it for 3 months, of 64.2%, which you might not think that's not a big difference, but it truly is a big difference. And that has stayed flat, okay? That rate has not gone up. But was important last in April, there were 244,000 payroll jobs created, non-farm payroll jobs created, and that's a fairly healthy number. And what we need, though, and I've said this before, to decrease the unemployment rate just by 0.1%, one needs to reduce. One needs to create approximately 300,000 jobs every month. And the reason why you have to create that many is that every month you have what's called new entrants into the labor market. These are people that have never held a job. They're new to the labor market. And on average, it's going to vary from month to month, and it does vary over time, but roughly between 100,000 to 150,000 jobs need to be created to find positions for people just new entrants to the labor market. And that's quite a, and that's usually, either high school graduates, college graduates, or people working, while they're going to high school or college or dropouts. So if you're not going to high school or not going to college, you look for a job, and when it's your first time, you're what's called a new entrant. So just to kind of stay even, not go up or down in terms of employment, the U.S. economy would need to produce roughly between 100,000 and 150,000 jobs each month. On top of that, to reduce the unemployment rate by, again, 0.1% after you've created the jobs for just the normal growth of population, you need to create about 150 to 160,000 jobs. So in round numbers, you put those two numbers together, the jobs you need for new entrants as well as the jobs you need for to reduce the unemployment rate by 0.1. You need, on average, around 300,000 jobs. A range is between 250,000 to 300,000 jobs. And that's why it's important that 244,000 number is very, very close to the low end of that range. And you would have expected that the rate would have gone down from 8.8 to 8.7%. Now, most economists were predicting that it would probably stay the same or slightly go up. They didn't expect it to jump from 8.8 to 9.0%. Now, what's going on is what I think is going on is when they did the survey last month, many of those so-called discouraged workers are now back actively seeking employment. So if you're one of the households that gets a call from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they have professionals that do this, every month. They know what they're doing. They're well trained, well paid. Based on your answers, you say yes. I applied for a job. I filled out a job application. Well, you now go from that no longer participating or discouraged worker. Excuse me. Two, you're actively seeking employment, and you did search it out, so you're now unemployed. And you need to keep in mind what I expect is going to happen is this: as more jobs, I think the economy is on a very, very slow recovery pace, and if you look at I should have said this a little bit earlier. I have posted on the web it's called prompopops.wordpress.com. It's a blog that I have on WordPress that complements this show, and it provides information, including articles, graphs, information tables, as well as many YouTube clips related to the topics or segments that I'm going to be covering in this show. And today especially with the Department of Labor's the Bureau of Labor Statistics announcement, I've given you a lot of information. Again, it's to complement the show, and I'm also very selective. I don't give you everything I look at. But again, if you're interested in it, want to get more information, want to go, you know, and it's really a starting point. What I suggest you do is go to my blog for the relevant segment that you would like to follow up on or get more information. View it and click on the links. I also have links to where I'm getting the information, and most of it comes for your labor, your unemployment information, as well as your consumer price index information, comes from the government. You know, they both the Department of Commerce and Department of Labor put out loads of statistics that economists as well as statisticians and people interested in what's happening with the economy look at every month, and that's available for free online. Before, you had to wait for the publications. Now, with the invention of the web 15 years ago, it's really really convenient, and I urge you to the extent, again, you're interested in it, to follow up on it. But I do have information on, you know, the unemployment rates. I have, you know, the last 10 years history, both in graphic form as well as the actual numbers. And I urge you to take a look at them. But so I point that out, and I do that for every segment of the show. And it's my preparation for the show that I make available whoever's listening. For their own information and enlightenment. And I urge you to take a look, browse it. Today I'm going to be covering John Boehner's speech, but I actually have the speech, the whole speech, both the text and the video, if you like to watch it or are so inclined. I think it's a very important speech. I refer to this the battle of the budget. I think it's the next round and major kind of the early fire, but it kind of sort of like the line in the sand type of speech. I'm jumping ahead, but I kind of alert you just to so you get a flavor of what's available. Okay, getting back to what's happening. I think what has occurred is when you're out of work, you gotta continue. You might get discouraged for a couple of weeks or even a month or two, but eventually, you know, hey, the bills pile up. You know, you need food, you need gasoline to get a job to commute to whether school or a job. You need to pay the rent, and as well as your phone bills. The bills are gonna keep coming. So what you have, so even though people do get discouraged and might for a couple of weeks or even a couple of months say they're looking, well, that they want a job, ready and willing to do it, but they haven't actually gone out and made the effort to get a job, whether that's filling a job application out or going to an employment site, for example, like monster.com, but there are others, depending on what field you're in, and looking for a job. When the Bureau of Labor Statistics does do the sample and you haven't done that, you're in the discouraged category. But what happens is, I think that changes every month. You know, one month they might be discouraged, and if they're in that sample, that they're not going to be counted. But the next month, and from here on out, they're very highly motivated, so they're going to go back into that unemployed category, and that's exactly what I think's happened. We had a drop from November through March, and initially you think, well, that more people were getting jobs. No, that really wasn't the case. You know, yes, jobs were being created, but nowhere near that 250,000 to 300,000 number. We haven't been close to that. And that's unusual, because when you come out of a recovery, you're usually growing at rates of 3, 4, 5, 6%. And on segment two, I have a graph at the very top of the page that compares both the Reagan and Obama administration in terms of what the growth rates were at the end of the recession. For example, this recession ended June of 2009. So we've had we've had 7 quarters now of positive economic growth. Unfortunately, it's rather, in terms of President Obama administration, those quarters have been rather, they've been positive, but very, very low. They haven't been 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9%. And it compares it with the Reagan. And that's why I put that chart in there. And I emphasize that because you need those higher growth rates to generate 300, 400, 500, 600, even 700,000 new jobs every month. You know, and I'm not complaining about 244,000 new jobs being created. That's good. We're going in the right direction. It is up. But it just isn't, it's just not generating, the economy is just not yet generating enough jobs that will do two things, absorb population growth or the new entrants in the job market, your college grad, your high school grad, as well as, like I said, you need, just for them, you need 100 to 150,000. And on top of that, you need another 150, 160,000 for people that have, you know, for example, been laid off and now are trying to get a job. So what you need to keep in your mind when you hear those unemployment numbers every month is it what people focus in on is the rate. Did it go up or down? And if you've heard the news Friday, Saturday, or even Sunday, or even early this week, you've heard that the rate went up. It went from 8.8% to 9%. And you go, oh, my God. I mean, that's a typical reaction. Uh-oh, it's getting worse. Well, yes and no. Yes, the rate went up, but the number of new jobs created went up as well. And it's 244,000 jobs is a good number. You know, what it really needs to be, and what I'm trying to say, it needs to be 2, 3, 4 times that. And you're not gonna be getting 300, 400, 500, 600,000 jobs created each month unless you're growing at a much higher rate, namely 4, 5, 6, 7%. It normally takes about 3 to 3.5% growth rate to generate in terms of the U.S. economy about 300,000 jobs plus. So and that first quarter was only 1.8%. So and if you were listening to I think it was the last show or the show before it, many economists were revising down their economic forecast as to what the economy was going to be growing this year. Now, all of them are agreeing that it's going to be growing, but the debate is, you know, is it going to be 2.5%, 3%, 3.5%, 4%? If you're looking at, obviously, if you're looking for a job, you want to have a much higher rate. Because the higher the rate, like I said, the more jobs that are going to be generated. And keep in mind, jobs the lion's share of new jobs are created by small to medium-sized companies, small businesses, not the government. And if you rely on the government to get out of this mess, you've been sorely disappointed. I remember when President Obama, you know, his first months in office, he was pushing and got past the so-called stimulus bill. And the American people were told that if this bill was passed, and it was, that the unemployment rate by now would be under 8%. If we did nothing, it would be around 8%. But by getting this bill passed, by now, frankly, we should be between 6 and 7% by now. Not at 9%. And they economists, I'm used to this, but let me just tell you, economic forecasts are not, it's an art. It's not a science. They're good for the short run. They really fall apart over any. After about a year or two, they're not very economic forecasting. The best I can say, it's an art. But they were saying that if we did nothing, it was going to go up above 9, and you know it would peak at somewhere between 9 and 10 and come back, and at this point in time would be around 8%. But if you did the stimulus package, it wouldn't go above 8%, and by now it would be between 6 and 7%. Well, the stimulus package has not worked, and the reason why it does not work, people are looking for a long-term commitment, not make work. And a lot of those so-called shovel-ready jobs were not ready. And let's be candid, a lot of that stimulus money was political payback money. A lot of it took the form of grants, for example, from the Department of Education to the various states, and kept government employees that already had a job employed for at least another year or two. But now what's happening with the with no new stimulus package in sight, many of those states that got that one-time federal grant no longer have it. And what's happening here in Dallas, as well as across the country, both at the state, county, and city, state, and county level, is layoffs in the government sector. So why they were not the first to be hit, now it's we've had layoffs, for example, at Richland College over the last several years. But I really think this is, we haven't seen the end of this. Until the economy fully recovers and gets back to full employment level, which is usually an unemployment rate of around 3 to 4%, and we're at least 5 to 6 years away from that. If we were to continue on with the policies of the Obama administration, I do not see unemployment going down at best maybe 1% a year. So if you're at 9%, you can do the math. You have to decrease from 9 to 4 is a 5% decrease. That would probably take about 5 years at the current, in terms of the current rates of growth. So the bottom line is the economy is just not creating the jobs that it needs. It's not growing as fast that it has on most economic. Usually get what's called a bounce. You know, you hit bottom, and we did hit bottom in June of 2009, and we're literally a month away, month and a half away from that anniversary date. We're going on 2 years that we've or eight quarters into the recovery, yet unemployment levels remain high. Now, what I'm fully anticipating is, because of that labor participation rate is way below what it should be. It's at 64.2%. It's more or less flatlined or bottomed out. What's going to happen is people that have been, you know, people are not going to, you know, roll over and play dead. They're still going to have to, you know, keep on going looking for the job. And eventually, as the economy hopefully picks up steam, more and more people that are discouraged now are going to get back into the labor force, are going to be actively looking for work. And I mean, you know, beating the bushes, leaving no rocks unturned. So what's going to happen is two things. You're going to see that civilian labor participation rate go up. But initially what that means is there's more unemployed people. So I fully expect the unemployment rate to rise. What I'm more or less predicting or anticipating is that, and again, I'm talking U3, the official unemployment rate, the U3 number going from 9 to around 10%, maybe a little bit over 10%, in the next 8 to 12 months. So from now to March, I fully, it can go up and down, but I'm saying the general trend from now until at least March of next year is it's going to go up. and it's going to go up even. It could even go up higher if we start to get 300, 400, 500,000 jobs actually being created every month, which is good news. More and more people are going to come back. So it might be somewhat counterintuitive, but that's what's going to go on. Now, I expect that, again, for the next 8 to 12 months. Then when it gets in a more or less normal range of between 66 and 67%, and if the economy really starts to get on a roll and we're seeing growth rates of 3, 4, 5%, then you're going to see it start back down again. But it's not, I fully anticipate by November next year, which is when the election is going to happen, that I fully expect the unemployment rate to be above 8%, and it could even be above 9%. It really depends on, it depends on too many variables that I couldn't even factor in. But what I'm trying to say, don't be discouraged. If you're looking for a job and hear the unemployment rate going up, you know, 9, 9.2, 9.4, 9.6, even 10%, you got to look at the other number. Have jobs been created? And if they have, keep on plugging. Now, the worst situation, and no one wants this, is what if we enter another recession? Now, I don't see that. You know, I'm looking at all the numbers. I just don't see that happening anytime soon. And you got to keep in mind employment or unemployment is what economists or economic forecasters call a lagging indicator. Unlike, for example, the stock market is a leading indicator, so it tends to go up before the economy goes up. Conversely, employment or unemployment, depending on how you're looking at it, tends to lag. So you can be, you know, we are in a recovery. We do have positive economic growth. And I think the next two quarters, I'm fully expecting we'll probably... You know, my kind of back of the envelope estimate is overall for this year we'll probably be at 3% growth in gross domestic product. I truly wish we were at 4 or 5, but given the economic policies that both the president as well as the Federal Reserve are following, I don't see it. There's some fundamental things that have to be done. One is cutting government spending, as well as pursuing a tight monetary policy. What's happening is both the United States government and the Federal Reserve are creating uncertainty by running these massive deficits. So until we get our government spending under control, we have a big question mark over the economy, and people that invest, for example, in Treasury securities, they're looking elsewhere. And that's why, for example, what I'm hearing is, and you've heard me say this before, there are really only three ways you finance or pay for government outlays. One is taxes. The second is debt. Namely, issuing of either federal treasury bills, notes, or bonds, or inflation. And what the Fed has been doing is what the Treasury, don't confuse the Treasury with the Fed. The Federal Reserve is the central bank of the United States. It's a quasi-government private institution. It's really a bank cartel that fixed the price of money, okay? That's my shorthand definition of it. But the Treasury is responsible for issuing the debt. And to the extent that they're having trouble finding people to buy it, the Federal Reserve has stepped in and bought it to the tune of roughly about 70% of the debt that's being issued is being bought by the Federal Reserve. And that's called monetizing the debt, and that's exactly what they're doing. See, it's not, and that's really not what you want, because when you do that, you are increasing the money supply, creating money, and that invariably leads to inflation. The bottom line in terms of the unemployment report is, I think it's encouraging, even though the number went up to 9%, and on a surface level you might say, well, that's not good. It was good in terms of the numbers of jobs that were created. You know, the trend is upward. You know, I'd like to see it over 300,000 or even 400,000 for a year or more. You know, that's what you would like and should expect, if not even a larger number. But to do that, much of that uncertainty that Washington is creating has to be reduced. And that is the problem. There are just too many unknowns. If you're a business owner, what happens is, if you're a business owner and I've said it once, I'll say it again, you really want to know what the cost of doing business is, whether it's your health insurance, your taxes, the prices of the raw materials that you need to buy, your electricity, your energy to run your cars, your trucks, heating and electricity, all of those costs. You need to get a handle on, and to the extent that you're uncertain about it, you're going to protect yourself by, not expanding. You're going to keep that cash in the bank as opposed to hiring people. You might want to grow. Don't get me wrong. You might want to grow and expand, but because of the uncertain business climate, and your confidence in the economy, you don't. And that's separate from a lot of business are hurting. For example, construction is in a world of hurts and has been and probably will be for at least another year or two. And a lot of, in the past, recoveries have been led by construction, whether it's residential or commercial. And because the core of this last financial crisis was excess building, largely due to the Federal Reserve providing money. That's what they provide, money at low interest rates. You had an excess of investment in the housing sector as well as commercial real estate. That was fueled by that. Now, there are other factors, people that should not have been getting loans in residential were, and a lot of those people, lost their houses when they lost their jobs, if they had a job when they got their real estate. So the initial financial crisis that happened in 2007, 2008, was caused by the speculation in real estate. What that means is you now have a rather large inventory of vacant houses and apartments, and as well as commercial real estate that need to. What happens is the prices of those properties have to go down, and it's going to take several years for that to happen. So there's not an immediate need. Now, it's going to vary from locality to locality, but there's not an immediate need for people that were working in construction to build new houses, new shopping centers, new office buildings. We're flush with that. We've had what's called a malinvestment in it. We misallocated resources because, again, of government interference with the market, namely the Federal Reserve. I put a lot of the blame, at least half, on the Federal Reserve following a very easy monetary policy, point one, and point two, not regulating the depository institutions that came under their preview. They were not on the ball. They were, asleep at the switch, and unfortunately now People totally uninvolved with that are paying it by losing their jobs. I don't want to be on a down note. I'm really somewhat cautiously optimistic on that on the April numbers, and I wanted to get that point of view out because it's very easy to conclude, well, you know, unemployment's going to go back up. It went to 8.8 to 9, and like I said, I think it's going to go back up to 10. It might even go over 10, hit 10.1, 2, or 3. Because think about it, you've had a lot of people now that are unemployed. And the government numbers, and I've said this in previous shows, and I don't want to get into details on this. The U3 numbers really understate the unemployment problem. Economists follow, especially if you're in the investment area, what's really looked at is the U6 numbers. And they went up as well, because that includes people, for example, that are working part-time, that really are looking for a full-time job, but had to take something, and usually that something means they're at a part-time job, not working anywhere near the hours that they would like, namely would like to work a full work week, and it's usually at a much poorer job than what they in the past were doing. You know, they might have been might be a contract administrator or a project manager or whatever someplace else. Now they're unemployed, have difficulty finding a job in their field, and take, for example, they might be now stocking shelves at a local grocery store or a retail store. And that's the only thing they can find. They take it, and they're not getting 40 hours. They might be getting 20 or 25 hours. If they're lucky, 30 hours at a much lower rate of compensation. So that's what's going on, and the U6 numbers reflect that. It not only includes people that are unemployed, it also includes part-time workers as well as those that are discouraged or what they call marginally attached to it. And that number is, I don't have it right in front of me. I believe it went up to 15.9. Just the number escapes me, but I have it on my site. I'm having a little bit more computer. Well, we have now at least I have the computer in front of me, but they have this roller. I'm used to a mouse with a wheel. and they have this, man, it's just not working. I've been trying to scroll down. It just doesn't work, and I don't. Oh boy, my voice is dry today. Fortunately, this is going to be an hour show. So don't let those high unemployment rate numbers get to you. Boy, my voice is going. Well, I hope it doesn't. I hope I don't lose it when I'm on the air. This is the first time this has happened. It's a little dry. What I'd like to do is transition now to the second topic, which is the misery index. And I do apologize. What some people have been calling the Obama misery index, or the OMI. And like I said earlier when I was introducing what I was going to be covering today, an economist called, his name was Arthur Oaken. He was an economic advisor to President Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s. He came up with what's called the misery index, which is the sum of the unemployment number that I just went over, and again, the official or U3 number, plus the consumer price index or inflation. So you basically add the unemployment rate with the inflation rate to get the misery index. And I have, with the unemployment rate going up, and like I said, I think it's going to go up for at least the next 8 to 12 months. You know, it's going to go up 0.1, 0.2, 0.3 every month. It might, you know, it might slip down a notch, but generally that I think is going to be the trend as the discouraged workers come back into the workforce. And this always happens. This is not unusual. What's unusual is the poor, very low economic growth rates. Again, if we were with the economy or business sector was growing at rates of 4, 5, 6%, which is not at all unusual when you're coming out of a recession, we would be generating 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate would be going down, not going up. But we've had over 20 months of the unemployment rate being over 9%. We're back over 9%, heading for 10. And I think it's going to hit 10 before it starts going down again. And I'm hammering on this because I think the jobs are out there, but the problem is there's so many unemployed. I think the real unemployment number is you have upwards of 30 million people plus that are looking for full-time jobs. It's that simple. And I've talked to I'm looking myself. I've talked to employers, and what I'm hearing is they have, and depending on the job, they have literally hundreds of applications for one job. So you might be outstanding, a hard worker. In normal circumstances, you probably would have got the job. Today, you're lucky if you get the interview. And that's what you're up against. So you can't get discouraged. You got to keep on sending those resumes out and talking, networking to people. But that's just the reality. And my advice is to take what you can get until you can find something better. It's that simple. So don't get discouraged. But the reason why they call it the misery index, the two things that does get you discouraged and you does put you in misery is a high unemployment rate with rising or increasing rates of inflation as measured by the consumer price index. And I don't want to get into the construction of a consumer price index. Think of it as a basket of goods. Every month there's a basket of goods. And people again go out. They check the prices of these goods repeatedly. And based on, for example, let's make it real simple, a loaf of bread. Now let's do milk because I'm more familiar with this one. I know bread, for some reason, at least where I shop, has been stuck. At least the bread I buy has been rather, it's jumped up, but then it stayed there. What's really been fluctuating are milk prices. They were in Dallas, I'm talking for Dallas, for example, it's usually $2 a gallon. Then they went up to $2.19, at least for a couple of weeks. Now they've at least temporarily gone back to around $1.67, $1.70. I think next week they're going to be back at $2. They're kind of fluctuating, and that's what happens with prices. They are going to go up and down. So what happens is every month you have people go out from the government and they shop and they don't buy the, they literally record what the prices are, and based on this, and it includes hundreds of goods and services. So it includes not only food, groceries, clothing, merchandise, you name it, it's in the basket. And also includes gasoline and electricity. So based on, again, they survey it, they have an index, and this index goes up and down. It's a number. And, for example, last month the consumer on a monthly basis went up 0.2%. That's per month. So you multiply it by 12, and you can see that's over you do the math. It's over 2%. you know, yeah, it's about 2.4% annual basis. And that's not good. It's heading in the wrong direction. Now, that includes both gasoline and food, but it's way above. The Federal Reserve likes to keep prices under 2%. Now, they play the game of what they exclude from that. They call it core inflation. They exclude, believe it or not, energy as well as food, because food and energy tends to be volatile. Well, that's true, but humans have to eat, and at least in the United States, you need gasoline to run your car. So even though it is true it's volatile, it's an important part and a significant percentage of your income. And now it's going to vary. Obviously, if you're a multimillionaire, the money you spend on food and gasoline is a small percent. But if you're poor or unemployed, the amount you spend on food and gasoline is a large percent. It really has an adverse impact. Inflation has an adverse impact on the people on the lower rungs in terms of income. And obviously, if no income is coming in, you're unemployed, it's really going to have an impact on you. So even though the Federal Reserve will exclude it when they're trying to track what inflation is, it's going up, and we've seen it in gasoline. We're seeing it now in food, and that's going to, the way I like to say, it's going to ripple into the economy, because people are working. You know, they're looking for raises, even though there are a lot of people looking for work. They're expecting a raise. They're expecting their pay to keep up with rising prices, and that's where the danger is. You sort of slowly. Inflation sort of creeps up on you. Before you know it, it really gets rolling. And it's a direct result of the Federal Reserve creating money, because the extent that the money that they create exceeds or is greater than the proportional increase in the growth of goods and services or income, if you will, in the economy, that's inflation. So inflation is a monetary, first and foremost, is a monetary phenomenon that over time gets translated into the prices of generally, not on just one specific good like gasoline, but across the board, gets reflected in the prices of both goods and services, and that's exactly what's happening. I'm looking at the clock. It's 5 o'clock. I start a little about. I'm going to run to 5:05 because we got to start. We have some technical difficulties. But the misery index is the sum of those two numbers, and it's going up. And that's not good. And I have a lot of information comparing what it was in the various administrations, and you can see. And the reason why I emphasize it now as opposed to later, you know, the previous year we had no inflation. We had a high rate of unemployment. Now you're getting the worst of both worlds. So you're getting high unemployment rates with increasing inflation. And that's a number to really look at. I think you're going to hear it more and more. I'm assuming that as the unemployment rate goes up, and I fully think it's going to go up over the next 12 months, as well as prices, more and more you're going to hear on the news what the Obama misery index is, and comparing it with past presidents. And it's invariably gone up. And again, it's just the sum of the unemployment rate plus the inflation rate measured by the consumer price index. That's as much as I really wanted to say on the misery index. And I did this at the last minute, but it's important. John Boehner is the Speaker of the House. That's an important political position. I think he's third in line. Should something happen to the president or vice president, the Speaker of the House would assume the presidency. I'm not making any predictions there. I'm just saying, it's an important political position. The Republicans did take the House back from the Democrats last November. And as a result, he's the first Republican speaker since 2006. So what he says, like the president says, is listened to. And he gave a speech at the Economic Club of New York last night. And I have the speech. I'm looking at the YouTube clip right now, or at least the still clip of it. And it's somewhat dry, but it's not a very long speech. It's about 25 minutes. So I urge you, if you have the time and inclination, to at least listen to it. And I also have the text, and I've highlighted in red what I think is important and what I'm going to lead up to. For the next several weeks, if not several months, the topic that will be on the news will be is whether or not the national debt limit, the statutory limit, is going to be increased. Because we're right now, next week, supposedly, we're going to, if you believe the Department of Treasury, we're going to be exceeding that limit. Now, they have ways to stretch it out for a couple of months, shifting money around. That's a detail. And the reason why this is important is President Obama, he's now into his third fiscal year where he's run deficits of over $1,000 billion. This year, fiscal year 2011, it's estimated to be over $1,600 billion. The main reason he has this problem is tax revenues are estimated to run about $2,500, and his budget for last year was over $3,800 billion. That's why we're running such a huge deficit. Well, the only way to pay for all this what's called deficit spending is to issue debt. You see the problem? There is a limit on the national debt, a statutory limit. You have to go back to Congress and ask for an increase. Now, what Congress has been doing, both the Democrat and Republican administration, is increasing that limit year after year after year. And that's coming up right now. What the Democrat Party, the Obama administration, would like is what's called a clean bill, an up-and-down vote on just increasing that debt ceiling. And the number I hear, I don't know exactly precisely what number they want. I heard it was they wanted an increase of $2,700 billion, which would take it from 4.3, I'm using round numbers, to $16,000 billion. And the Republicans are saying, no, if you want an increase, and what Boehner is saying is, we will only agree to an increase in that national debt limit if we have a corresponding cut, budgetary cut, equal to it. So if you want, for example, a $2,000 billion increase in the national debt, you're going to have to come up with a $2,000 billion cut, at least a $2,000. He actually wants more than that. And I agree with him if you've been listening to my show. And in terms of a 5-year, usually the budget windows are 10 years. In this case, it's 5 years. So you do the math. Over 5 years, let's use in the $2,000 billion example, that would be a cut of spending of $400 billion. And that's what they need to do. They're running deficits over $1,000 billion. To balance the budget, they should be talking about cuts of at least $1,000 billion, and they're not. Neither political party is doing it. So this is a way to force President Obama to cut spending, and that's exactly what he's doing, and he's rather firm on this. I was really surprised because I thought he was going to waffle or use weasel word. He's very clear, and he even uses those words in his speech. That's exactly what they want. In addition, they want reforms, and I read that as they want a balanced budget amendment. But even if they got that passed, it would be many years before it would go into effect, because even if you passed it out of Congress, it's going to take and that takes a two-thirds vote, you're going to have the states approve it. So that could be many years out, 5, 6, 7, before it really passed. We have a problem today where we have to get our house in order, our fiscal house in order, and the only way they can do that realistically is they have to close departments. Now, neither political party is saying that yet. I think it's just a matter of time. The writing's on the wall, because I think what the American people are saying, we want the budget balance now. The Tea Party movement, as well as the majority of American people, want balanced budgets. They want the federal government to live within its means, and that means a balanced budget, which means you have to cut spending. The problem is not a revenue problem. It's a spending problem. Spending is totally out of control. And the only leverage, frankly, I see is this ceiling, because the president, again, can veto any bill, and the Senate is controlled by the Democrats. So I highlight that speech because I think it's a very important speech in terms of its implication. Now, I think it's called the first round of negotiations, or maybe the second round, responding to the administration. But it's an important speech. I recommend that you listen to it, especially go to that section that I've highlighted. Ladies and gentlemen, the time is 5:08. My name is Raymond Thomas, host of the Pronk Pop Show. This is the last show of this semester. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated. They do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. I urge you to... In the future, I do not, as of today, I do not know whether or not I will be having this show continue in the summer or not. It really depends on my employment situation. Obviously, if I get a job, that's going to come first. So right now, I have the time while I'm looking to get a job to do the show. But should I, find gainful employment? This obviously is fun, nice to do. It keeps me up, keeps me awake, and it's been a pleasure. So I'm really going to sign out for this semester, and I may be back in the summer, and maybe back in the fall, but that's sort of up in the air. It's been fun. I hope you've enjoyed my shows. I might even be on next week, but again, that, like I said, as of right now, I really couldn't even tell you. But it's been enjoyable and a pleasure. I wish the students that are graduating from Richland College this week the best of luck, whether it's finding a job or continuing their education, either locally or an out-of-state university. Thank you very much, and I'll sign off for now, and back to the music.